Hello and welcome to Unity Presbyterian Church Online. This week in worship, Pastor David takes a look at extravagant gifts as Mary has an encounter with Jesus. Let's listen.
Well, when I was 8 years old, my parents were going to celebrate their anniversary, and they were going to go away for their anniversary. And so my brothers and I, were going to stay at one of my parents' friends' houses for the weekend. And it was on, I think, that first day of the weekend when I realized I did not have a present for my parents. And I was 8 years old, and that was a startling realization that I needed to get my parents an anniversary gift. And that was followed very quickly by another startling realization. I had no money. I mean, I was eight. So how could I make money to go and buy a gift for my parents? Well, the woman we were staying with was so nice. You know, she kind of empathized with the angst of an eight-year-old boy. And she said, well, why don't you make something? You know, you can make a card. You can make a little craft. And your parents will love that. And I have no doubt that they would have. I mean, what parent doesn't love getting a craft from their child? But I wanted to do something more. I wanted to do something over the top, really extravagant. That's what I wanted to do to show my love for my parents. And that's when the idea hit me. I thought, I'm going to get them a bird. I'm going to get them a pet bird. Now, mind you, they had never mentioned ever an interest in having a pet bird. To this day, I don't know where that idea came from, but once that idea was planted in my mind, I was hooked. Now, again, I had no money. And so where was I going to get this pet bird? Well, that's when I came up with this ingenious idea. The woman we were staying with had a bird cage, an old bird cage. And so I took that outside, and I tied a piece of string to it, to the opening of it. I put then a bunch of breadcrumbs that I crumpled up in the birdcage, and my plan was as soon as, I don't know, a blue jay or a sparrow, something flew in that birdcage to eat the breadcrumbs, I would slam the door shut and have my parents a pet bird. I stayed there for about an hour, and I'm so thankful that no bird actually flew in there, because I don't know what my parents would have done if I said, happy anniversary, here's a blue jay. That's not the sort of gift that they were expecting. But I think back on that story, and I kind of smile, because I know that my heart was in the right place. I wanted, as an eight-year-old boy, to just show over-the-top love to my parents. I didn't want to do something that they would expect. They would expect a card. They would expect a craft, but I wanted to do something more. When have you wanted to show love in a really over-the-top way, in a really extravagant way, not a way that that person you were showing love to would expect, and not in a way that you've done before, but in a way that would surprise and shock them, and they would remember it for a long time afterwards? Well, that is really what our story is about today. We're doing this series on encounters, where we study these encounters that people have had with Jesus and how they are changed because of that encounter. And in today's encounter, this woman encounters Jesus and shows over-the-top amount of love towards Jesus. And it doesn't only change her, it changes everyone who witnesses that event, everyone who is in the room with them that day. And I hope that includes us. As we read this story, as we, in some ways, witness this event, I hope we, too, are changed by this encounter. So as we get into it, think about what over-the-top love feels like. What does it look like? When have you received it? And how often, then, did you think about it and reflect on it, even after that expression of love? Here is how our story begins. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Okay, so at the beginning of the story, we need to ask, well, why did Jesus travel to Bethany? Why that particular town? And the answer is quite simple. That's where Jesus' friends lived. Jesus was going to visit his friends. Yes, Jesus had close friends, just like you or I. And so Jesus is going to visit his close friends. Lazarus, for example, lived in Bethany. Now, the last time Jesus traveled to Bethany, Lazarus had died. And that was the moment where Jesus raised him from the dead. I mean, if I was Lazarus, I think I'd be friends with Jesus too, after having that experience. And so Lazarus is close friends with Jesus, but Lazarus also has sisters, Mary and Martha, and Jesus is close friends with them all. And so he stops into the town of Bethany in his travels on his way to go and celebrate the Passover in Jerusalem, and he visits with his friends. And we're told in the next verse that here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served, while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. I hope you can imagine this scene, because what feels better than a warm meal after a long day of travel? That's how Jesus is no doubt feeling right now, where he's been walking all day. I bet he's a bit tired, his body's aching, he's hungry, and they invite him in and say, sit down at this table. We want you to have a warm meal. In fact, we are having a dinner that is dedicated to you. It is to honor you. And so please, just sit down, relax, take a load off, and let us serve you tonight. Well, Lazarus is at the table with Jesus. I imagine them catching up, talking about what's happened since the last time they were together. Martha, we're told, is serving, as Martha so often is. But where is Mary? We don't see where Mary is in this verse, do we? Now, a couple times ago, when Jesus was visiting, Martha once again was serving. You probably remember this story, where she's cooking, cleaning, getting everything ready for Jesus. And where's Mary that time? Well, Mary was at Jesus' feet. Mary was simply sitting in the presence of Jesus, learning from Jesus, in conversation with Jesus. And you remember this story where Martha gets upset. It says, Jesus, tell Mary to help me. I'm doing all the work here. And Jesus gently says, well, no, she chose the better thing here, which is relationship, experiencing the presence of God. And so this time, in present day story, Martha once again is serving. She's getting everything ready for this meal to honor Jesus. But where's Mary? Well, we find out in the next verse. It says, then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume, and she poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. All right, there's quite a bit going on in that verse, isn't there? There's quite a bit for us to unpack about what we just read. I mean, Mary does the very strange act of taking a bottle of perfume, pouring it on Jesus' feet, and then, as if that wasn't strange enough, she then wipes his feet with her hair. What is going on here? What is Mary's motivation in this moment? Well, let's begin unpacking this step by step. First, the first question I came to when I read this story is, what is pure nard? I don't think I've seen that perfume when I've walked down the CVS perfume aisle. I've not seen pure nard as something you can purchase. And so what is pure nard? Well, what I learned this week is that nard comes from the nard plant. And we've got a picture of what that looks like. What I'm told is that nard has both a sweet but also an earthy sort of smell to it. And Mary has a whole pint of pure nard. And we're told it was a very expensive perfume. So, what is Mary's motivation here? Why does she take pure nard and pour it on Jesus' feet? Well, here's what I believe. And I'll go on to show you why I believe that in a second. But I believe that Mary is wanting to show an extravagant act of love towards Jesus. And I think that she believes the act of pouring this expensive perfume on Jesus' feet, that is a way to show over-the-top love. That is the way to show extravagant love. We probably wouldn't think that today. We'd probably say, what are you doing? Get away from my feet. But let's find out as we dig in a little bit deeper why this may have been the case for Mary. Well, as I thought about this week, I especially kind of narrowed in on that word extravagant. And so I decided to look up the definition of it because I wanted to dig in a little bit deeper of what does it mean to show extravagant love. And I was actually surprised at the definition I came across. Extravagance is a wandering beyond proper limits. That's true, though, isn't it? That's surprising as a definition, but that's true. Because to do something normal would be to do something within proper limits. You're doing something as it's expected to be done. So what was expected at this dinner table, at this meal that they were sharing to honor Jesus? Well, what was expected was for Mary to sit down at the table, to join in the conversation in honoring Jesus, and to really share her love in that way, just like everyone else was doing. That would have been within the proper limits. That would have been expected. But what Mary does instead is something outside of those proper limits. She does something that goes beyond those proper limits. She does something, by definition, extravagant. You know, she takes a bottle of expensive perfume. She doesn't sit at the table, but instead sits at Jesus' feet. And then she washes his feet, but not with water, not like what Jesus is going to do just a week later around the Passover meal with his disciples when he washes their feet. No, she goes over the top and washes his feet with perfume. And not just normal perfume, but some of the most expensive perfume that she could find. This is way beyond the proper limits. This is way beyond anything that would have been expected or would have been considered normal. But Mary doesn't want to do something normal. She doesn't want to do something expected. She wants to show extravagant, over-the-top love towards Jesus. One more piece to this story to show you how extravagant this love really is. We need to determine how expensive was this perfume. I mean, John, the author of this story, simply says, well, it's expensive perfume, but how expensive is it really? We learn that as we go into the next verse. Verse 4 says, but one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. Think about that for a second. Now, he did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And as keeper of the money bag, he used it to help himself to what was put into it. 1 year's worth of wages. I cannot fathom ever using 1 year's worth of income on one bottle of perfume. But that's beside the point. I mean, the amount of money that this bottle of perfume costs is an example of extravagance. It's an example of going beyond what is expected, of the proper limits, of what is normal. Because Mary wants, intentionally, to show an extravagant act of love towards Jesus. And in this story, Judas is offering a contrast to Mary's actions. You see, at first, Judas seems a lot more practical, doesn't he? I mean, Judas says, well, why would you do that? Why would you waste that bottle of perfume? You could have sold it. You could have got a year's worth of wages and then done some good with it. You could have given that to the poor. So on the surface, Judas seems to be the practical one. Now, John tells us that, well, no, his inner motivation, that they probably found out later, was that he was a thief and he was stealing from their communal money that they had together, but we don't know that in this moment. In this moment, Judas is just saying, Mary, as he sees Mary doing it, pouring out this perfume, going, why is she doing this? John tells us that Judas objected and said, that's not right. And who among us wouldn't have a same reaction if you were around that dinner table that night? We would probably, too, think, whoa, that's such a waste. That's over the top. Why is Mary doing that? But Jesus is not concerned by the lack of practicality of that act. And here's why. In the final verses, Jesus says, leave her alone. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. This is the twist at the end of the story. That Mary is actually preparing Jesus for his upcoming burial. And so to Jesus, this act is not an economic issue. This is not a waste. No, to Jesus, it's a story about getting ready. And it's getting ready particularly for Jesus' approaching death. You see, remember at the beginning of the story, we were told that this story takes place 6 days before the Passover. And it is at the Passover meal, what we call the Last Supper, where Jesus washes his disciples' feet, teaches them how to remember him through the breaking of bread and the giving of wine, and then they go out into the Garden of Gethsemane. And it's in that Garden of Gethsemane that Judas, after he departs, comes back with the soldiers, betrays Jesus. He's arrested, and the next day crucified. And so in the story we're reading today, Jesus is 6 days away from the events that eventually lead to his death. And Jesus says Mary is getting him ready for his burial. Mary, on some level, had an intuition about what was going to happen to Jesus less than a week later. And she decided to then show an over-the-top, extravagant act of love to get him ready for what he was going to have to go through in 6 days. I really wonder if the disciples, I mean, those who were sitting around the table at that dinner that was to honor Jesus, if they had any idea what was coming. Sometimes I have to think that they did. I mean, how many times in the Gospels did Jesus tell them, I am going to die, I have to die, this is how it's going to take place? And yet it seems like they're oblivious to what is quickly approaching to them. They missed it somehow. But Mary doesn't miss it. She realizes the pain that Jesus is going to experience in 6 short days and decides to anoint him, to get him ready by this extravagant act of love. You know, I admire Mary in this story. Because Mary does something unexpected, something so outside the realm of anything that I would ever think about doing. I really admire Mary because she gets Jesus ready for his burial. And the way that she interacts with Jesus in this story, it really does present to us 2 different ways to live. The story presents to us 2 different ways to show love. The options are, we can follow the response of Mary, or we can follow the response of Judas. You see, Judas, I mean, he's concerned with the practicality of it all. He's really concerned with the money going to waste. And there's some truth to that, isn't there? Because money is a finite resource. It's not unlimited. You spend some or you give some away, and then you have to go make more. You don't just have an endless supply of it. So he sees that, and in the practicality standpoint says, Mary, what you're doing is wrong. But Mary doesn't look at the situation like that. She's not looking through the lens of money or limited resource. She's looking through the lens of love. And love is not a limited resource. I mean, you can give love away, you can share love freely, And there's always going to be more of it. And she realizes that. She realizes that, yeah, it's going to take money to show the act of love that I want to show, but it's not about the money. It's not about the year's worth of wages. It's about the love that I'm feeling as I go through this act towards Jesus. And in this story, the way John presents it as he writes this, he encourages us, hey, don't simply go towards the Judas side all the time, but instead, have those moments of extravagance where you are channeling your inner Mary and sharing love in such a free, unlimited way. Yeah, the story, it really encourages us to be like Mary. And that's a challenge for me personally. And for others of us who are very, maybe, practical oriented, where I do everything with prudence. You know, I've got a long plan of the right way to do things. And Mary, in this moment, just kind of blows all that up. But I have to think that Mary was not reckless in her life, that this was not a pattern for her of just wasting years' worth of wages on things. But she chose a moment when she knew it was extremely important, and then chose to act. I believe that's why Jesus really affirms her. I mean, if this was a pattern of her always being in debt, spending all these years' worth of wages, I don't think Jesus would have said, good job. But it appears that in this moment, she chose, hey, this is the time where I want to do something over the top. And that I can get behind. Or to say, okay, yeah, for most of my life, I want to live in a practical way. For most of my life, I want to do what I think is the right way to live. But every once in a while, in particularly showing love to someone, I need to go over the top. I need to go beyond my normal limits, beyond my normal comfort level, beyond what's expected to show love towards someone else. I was really struck by that phrase when we're told that after Mary did this, the whole house was filled with the fragrance of that perfume. I mean, the idea of scent, I mean, that's such a strong memory indicator, isn't it? Where sometimes, I bet you've had this experience, where you get a whiff of some certain scent, and it brings back a memory so quickly. And so to hear that this whole room was filled with that fragrance, I bet every time that those disciples who were around that table, even years later, if they were to smell the perfume, that pure nard, they would think of that moment. They would think of that act of love, wouldn't they? You know, there are other experiences, there are other times when you are just overwhelmed by a scent. I can think of one in particular. Do you know what Axe body spray is? It's not a good scent, I'll tell you that. So Axe body spray is really popular among, I would say, middle school boys especially. And there was a time where I was a camp counselor, and Axe body spray was really kind of in vogue, and the boys decided to have a prank on the girls' cabin. Now, pranks were not allowed. Let me say that right off the bat. But we learned that they were planning this prank anyway. And the prank was to take kind of as like a can or a bottle of Axe body spray, to bash in the top of it so that it just starts spraying out and you can't stop it, and then to just toss it right into the girl's cabin so that it continues to spray out and there's nothing you can do about it. And then within moments, that whole cabin is filled with the fragrance of middle school boy cologne. We had a long talking to with those boys after that, and it took probably the whole week for that cabin to finally air out. But it gets to you, the thinking, this idea that you can walk into a room and be filled with a fragrance or even a feeling. And I think that's part of what this story wants us to realize, is that there are times where you can change a whole room or you can change a whole atmosphere simply by your attitude and your presence. And here's what I mean by that. I mean, I can think of the last time that I came home from work, maybe frustrated or stressed or irritable, and within moments, the whole house feels that. And the whole house then is feeling a little bit more stressed, a little bit more frustrated. You can change a presence of an environment simply by your attitude, what you bring into that presence. And that's some of what we need to be cautious of, is am I filling rooms with negativity? Am I filling rooms with feelings that make people walk more on eggshells? Or, on the flip side, can we do what Mary does? Because Mary fills a room with the fragrance of love. And you can do that too. I mean, you can change the atmosphere of an entire family with a kind comment, with a genuine smile, with an optimistic or joyful attitude. You can change atmospheres as you walk into them. And in doing so, we follow the example of Mary, who changed that entire dinner that night. She changed the entire experience of everyone who's at that dinner with a feeling of extravagant love. This story reminds me that when I begin to treat love as something that may run out, or something not to be wasted, that I really need to channel Mary and instead show extravagance in my love. Now, extravagant love, it takes some planning. It takes some intentionality. It's not just spontaneous. I mean, think about Mary. She had to go and buy that perfume, didn't she? And they didn't have credit cards in this time period, and so she felt the weight of a year's worth of wages as she went into the market and gave that over to buy that small bottle of perfume. So her act of love, it took planning, and it took intentionality. And that is going to be my goal for all of us today and everybody watching today, is to take some time and plan your own act of extravagant love. And you're going to do that in two primary relationships. The first relationship you'll do that with is with God. That is primary. That's Mary's example of doing this towards Jesus. That is Mary's encounter. Is how can you show over-the-top love in your own relationship with God? That is first and foremost. And that takes some planning, takes some intentionality. But then the second relationship is, I would invite you to pick one. Pick a relationship, whether that's with a spouse or a son or a daughter or a friend that you maybe just think needs a little bit more love these days, and intentionally plan some way to show extravagant love towards that person. That is going to be the challenge for today. You know, in an earlier gospel, when this story is told, Jesus calls Mary's act beautiful. Yeah, what we just read today is a beautiful, vulnerable, authentic act of worship and showing love. And that, I contend, is an act that we all need to replicate.
If you would like more information about Unity Presbyterian Church, please visit our website at www.unitypres.org or visit us on Facebook. This is the Unity Presbyterian Church Podcast. Have a great week.